Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free, daily, 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America's Learning English branch in Washington. Today on the program, we tell you about an interesting new movie that deals with the sensitive subject of mental illness. Actor Mark Ruffalo plays a man whose ancestors were once rich and powerful in the early years of the United States. But the family no longer has any money.
We could go to the Museum of Fine Arts and look at great-grandpapa's portrait.
Why is this portrait hanging in a museum?
Because a very important artist named John Singer Sargent painted it.
Why?
Why? Don't you know who we are?
We will hear from Maya Forbes. She directed the movie. She modeled it on her own family. Her father was a manic depressive. Later, you will hear Jonathan Evans' technology report. This week, he tells us about a new kind of turbine that can generate energy without killing bats and birds.
Wind causes the mast to oscillate or move back and forth. It does not spin around, so it creates no risk to birds and bats.
And as always, we will present The Making of a Nation. Every day here at VOA Learning English, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English because we exist to help you learn everyday American English. We speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. Director Maya Forbes tells about her family and its struggles with depression, poverty, and sex discrimination in her new film, Infinitely Polar Bear. The film is not like other Hollywood movies that have a happy ending. Instead, Infinitely Polar Bear tells about an American family and how it reacted to events, some of them humorous and others serious, back in the 1970s. VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke recently with Maya Forbes about how her childhood struggles helped her become a successful film writer, producer, and director.
We could go to the Museum of Fine Arts and look at great-grandpapa's portrait.
Why is this portrait hanging in a museum?
Because a very important artist named John Singer Sargent painted it.
Why?
Why? Don't you know who we are?
Actor Mark Ruffalo plays Cameron Stewart, a member of a once powerful family. His ancestors had a lot of money many years ago, but now the family has very little. Cameron Stewart has a severe mental condition. He suffers from manic depression, also known as bipolar disorder. This is how his younger daughter describes the disorder.
Our dad is totally polar bear.
Mr. Stewart's older daughter, Amelia, corrects her sister.
Bipolar.
Maya Forbes used her family's story as a model for the Stewarts.
My father was manic depressive. My mother is African American. My father was from a wealthy New England family, but we didn't have any money. My mother wanted to send us to great schools.
No, no, Maggie Stewart, you cannot leave your family.
Pauline, I'm desperate. We have no money.
Like Maggie, Maya Forbes' mother left her husband to care for the children. She went to work in New York City, but visited the family every weekend.
My sister and I were very embarrassed of our situation. We were ashamed. Our apartment was a disaster, a mess. My father was embarrassing and a mess. And at some point he said to us, you don't need to hide, and you can tell people that I'm manic depressive. That's who I am.
Ms. Forbes says people like her film because mental illness has affected them in some way.
People are coming to share their story with me, and most people are affected by mental illness with somebody they love, whether it's a parent or a child or sibling.
Her film also deals with sexual and racial discrimination. Her mother was well-educated. But Ms. Forbes says she could not get a high-paying job in Boston because she was a black woman.
My mother going into the world of finance, there are not a lot of black women in finance, you know, today. I mean, it's not like we've made huge strides in that arena. Everyone feels like we solved the problems because Obama is our president. We're post-racial. That is not true.
The director also says that she, like other women, has dealt with sex discrimination in Hollywood.
I don't know why there aren't more women directors. I just think they aren't handed the big movies. They aren't handed the big movies. And those are the movies where we can actually make some money.
She says it was not easy making a film while raising a family. But she says her childhood helped her to become independent and strong.
I love you. Do you want me to pick you up after school?
No!
I'll be here at 3.
Now, our weekly look at the latest technology news. Wind turbines are tall structures with large blades used to produce electricity. They are useful sources of low-cost, renewable energy. But they can also be deadly to birds and bats. The turbine's large blades turn quickly in the sky. Birds and bats sometimes fly into them and are killed. But a new type of wind generator may offer an answer to that problem. Our technology correspondent Jonathan Evans tells us more.
In 2002, Spanish inventor David Yanez saw a short film about the Tacoma Narrows Bridge in the U.S. Strong winds caused the bridge to collapse in 1940. That incident was an example of the powerful vibrations wind can create when it blows past a long pole, like a car antenna or a stick of light wood. It gave Mr. Yanez the idea for a new type of wind energy generator. He said he wanted it to include all the desired qualities. He said it should be as low cost as possible and need as little maintenance as possible. He also said he wanted it to be quick to set up. Mr. Yanez and his friend Raul Martin took the idea to an engineering business, but they were told their idea would never work. So Mr. Yanez and Mr. Martin built a small wind tunnel to experiment on their own. They built a large working model of the generator in a field near their workspace. They called the equipment Vortex. Mr. Yanez described how the Vortex generator works. He said there is a mast that serves like a blade on turbines. It is made from the same material as other generators. Wind causes the mast to oscillate or move back and forth. It does not spin around, so it creates no risk to birds and bats. The vortex generator creates about 30% less energy than a wind turbine with blades, but it is lighter and less costly to build and maintain. It is made mostly of plastic and has very few moving parts. The generator also does not create noise. The current prototype works at wind speeds ranging from 1.5 to 7 meters per second. The inventors say the next step is building a 12.5 meter tall bladeless generator that could power small businesses or individual homes. They add that the generator could also provide additional power to a larger power supply system. Mr. Yanez expects the Vortex bladeless generator to be ready for general sale by 2017. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Thanks, Jonathan. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. The Making of a Nation is coming up next. It began here on The Voice of America in 1969. It tells about the social changes, events, documents, and personalities that shaped the United States and helped it have an influence on world history. And it explains the reasons the country's leaders made their decisions. The Making of a Nation is coming up in a moment. Every day on As It Is, we report on issues that we believe are of interest to you. We go in depth on the latest news events as we report on issues that concern you. We talk with newsmakers, lawmakers, policymakers, experts, analysts, and VOA correspondents around the world to help you understand our fast-moving and ever-changing planet. We want to hear what interests you. Tell us what you want to hear about. You may hear stories about your interests on a future show. Send us a letter or a postcard. Our postal address is VOA Learning English, Washington, D.C., 20237 USA. And, of course, you can email us. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. That's learningenglish@voanews.com. And please know that we read every message you send us. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. And be sure to listen to VOA World News at the beginning of every hour, Universal Time, every day of the year. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from the VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington. For all the women and men of the Voice of America all around the world, thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we tell the story of the European settlers who established colonies in the American Northeast in the 1600s. The Puritans were one of the largest groups from England to settle in the area known as Massachusetts. They began arriving in 1630. The Puritans had formed the Massachusetts Bay Company in England. The king had given the company an area of land between the Charles and Merrimack rivers. The Puritans were Protestant Christians who had split from the Anglican Church. They wanted to change the church to make it more holy, more pure in their eyes. The Puritans were able to live as they wanted in Massachusetts. Soon, they became that area's largest religious group. By 1690, 50,000 people were living in Massachusetts. Puritans thought their faith was the only true religion and that everyone should believe in it. They also believed that church leaders should lead the local government, and that all people in the colony should pay to support the Puritan church. The Puritans thought it was the job of government leaders to tell people what to believe. But some people disagreed with the Puritans, who became leaders of the colony. One of those who disagreed was a Puritan minister named Roger Williams. Roger Williams believed, as all Puritans did, that other European religions were wrong. He thought the spiritual traditions of the Native Americans were wrong too. But he did not believe in trying to force others to agree with him. He thought that it was a sin to punish or kill anyone in the name of Christianity. And he thought that only members of the church should have to pay to support the church. Roger Williams began speaking and writing about his ideas. He wrote a book arguing that it was wrong to punish people for having different beliefs. Then he declared that the European settlers were stealing land that belonged to the Indians. He said the King of England had no right to let people settle on land that was not his. The Puritan leaders of the Massachusetts Bay Colony forced Roger Williams to leave the colony in 1636. He traveled south. He bought land from local Indians and started a city, Providence. The English Parliament gave him permission to establish a new colony, Rhode Island, with Providence as its capital. As a colony, Rhode Island accepted people of all religious beliefs, including Catholics, Quakers, Jews, and even people who did not believe in God. Roger Williams also believed that governments should have no connection to a church. This idea of separating church and state was new. Later, it would become one of the most important of all the governing principles of American democracy. Other colonies were started by people who left Massachusetts to seek land. One of those colonies was Connecticut. A group led by a Puritan minister named Thomas Hooker left Boston in 1636. They moved inland and settled near the Connecticut River. Others soon joined them. Other groups from Massachusetts traveled north to find new homes. The King of England had given two friends a large piece of land in the north. The friends divided it. John Mason took what became the colony of New Hampshire. Ferdinando Gorgas took the area that later became the state of Maine. Maine was never a colony. It remained a part of Massachusetts until the United States was established in 1776. The area that became New York State was settled by the Dutch. They called it New Netherland. Their home country, the Netherlands, was a great power with colonies all over the world. A business called the Dutch West India Company owned most of the colonies. The Dutch claimed American land because of explorations by Henry Hudson, an Englishman working for the Netherlands. The land the Dutch claimed was between the areas settled by the Puritans in the north and the Anglican tobacco farmers in the south. The Dutch were not interested in settling the territory. Instead, they wanted to earn money. The Dutch West India Company built trading posts on the rivers claimed by the Netherlands. Indians brought animal skins to these posts for use in making goods for buyers back in Europe. In 1626, the Dutch West India Company bought two islands from the local Indians. The islands were Manhattan and Long Island. The Dutch paid for Manhattan with goods worth only about $24. The Dutch West India Company tried to find people to settle in America, but few Dutch wanted to leave Europe. So the colony welcomed people from other colonies and other countries. These people built a town on Manhattan Island. They called it New Amsterdam. It was soon full of people who had arrived on ships from faraway places. Up until this time, the population was mostly Dutch and British, but now one could hear as many as 18 different languages spoken in New Amsterdam. In 1655, the governor of New Netherland took control of a nearby Swedish colony on Delaware Bay. 9 years later, the English did the same to the Dutch. The English seized control of New Amsterdam and renamed it New York. That ended Dutch control of the territory that is now the states of New York, New Jersey, and Delaware. Most of the Dutch in New Amsterdam did not leave after it became New York. The English allowed everyone to stay. They let the Dutch have religious freedom. The Dutch were just not in control anymore. The Duke of York owned the area now. He was the brother of King Charles II of England. The king gave some of the land near New York to two of his friends. Sir George Carteret and Lord John Berkeley established a colony. They called it New Jersey, after the English island where Carteret was born. The two men wrote a plan of government for their colony. It created an assembly that represented the settlers. It provided for freedom of religion. Men could vote in New Jersey, whatever their religion. Soon, people from all parts of Europe were living in New Jersey. Then King Charles took control of the area. He sent a royal governor to rule, but the colonists were still allowed to make their own laws through their elected assembly. The King of England did the same in each colony he controlled. He collected taxes from the people who lived there, but allowed them to govern themselves. One religious group that was not welcome in England was the Quakers. Quakers called themselves Friends. They believe that everyone has an inner light that leads them to God. Quakers believe they do not need a religious leader to tell them what is right, so they had no clergy. Quakers believe that all people are equal. The Quakers in England refused to recognize the king as more important than anyone else. They also refused to pay taxes to support the Anglican Church. Quakers believe that killing is always wrong, so they would not fight, even when they were forced to join the army. They also refused to promise their loyalty to a king, or a government, or a flag, only to God. For all these reasons, the English did not like the Quakers. Many Quakers wanted to leave England, but they were not welcome in most of the American colonies. One Quaker found a solution. His name was William Penn. William Penn was not born a Quaker. He became one as a young man. His father was an Anglican and a good friend of the king. King Charles borrowed money from William's father. When his father died, William Penn asked that 81. The king gave William Penn land, which the king's council named Pennsylvania, meaning Penn's Woods in Latin. The Quakers now had their own colony. William Penn said the colony should be a place where everyone could live by Quaker ideas. That meant treating all people as equals and honoring all religions. It also meant that anyone could be elected as a leader. In most other colonies, people could believe in any religion, but they could not vote or hold office unless they were a member of the majority church. In Pennsylvania, all religions were equal. The colonizing of America also spread to the South. The farming economies of these areas came to depend on slavery as a source of labor. It would also lead, 2 centuries later, to a civil war that nearly tore the nation apart.
Slavery in the Southern colonies will be our story on The Making of a Nation tomorrow. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at learningenglish.voanews.com. For Steve Ember, I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, inviting you to join us again tomorrow for The Making of a Nation, American History from VOA Learning.